I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 38 of Season 6 of Movie Reminiscence, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob. And joining me today is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham Movie A Day and the Shepherd of the Lambcast. Welcome back, Richard.
Glad to be here. I wish I had $1 million, but you know what? I'd be here anyway.
Well, instead, here's some popcorn. How's that?
Thank you. I like that.
All right. So minute 38 begins with George still deep in thought and ends with a party getting underway. So we ended things yesterday with George once again having what's the term? Having a shoe thrown into his plans. Something.
A fly in the ointment, something.
No, flying the ointment is John McClane, you know. A monkey in the wrench. There you go. We can use all the John McClane phrases for what is going on there. But basically, he was given the sad news for him, at least, that he's not about to go on his tour around the world. I mean, we know now that George is... how old is George? George is 25, I believe, at this point. If this is 1932.
That sounds about right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 1932 and he was born in 1907. So yes, he's 25 at this point, you know, ready to take on the whole world. And now he finds out that his plans have been thwarted once again and that he has to stay and run the billion loan. Because Harry apparently got a job. Well, first of all, Harry is married and apparently has been promised a job by his new father-in-law, which we'll have to find out what type of job that is. Maybe today we'll hear about that.
Well, Harry's a genius at something, right?
Apparently. Well, we know that Harry is very good at a lot of things. So, you know, we can see Harry in the background picking up a whole bunch of suitcases. George walks in a little stupor, bumps into somebody as he's walking. We see him walking past the boards that are telling us the eastbound and westbound trains. And then he ends up coming up to Ruth. And as this is all happening, we hear Uncle Billy in the background go, "This is the new Mrs. Bailey, my nephew's wife." And some man goes, "How are you?" He goes, old friend of the Baileys." "Oh, really? What are their names? Let's see. Oh, of course, I've heard him speak of you. And I want to tell you, we're going to give the biggest party this town ever saw." So I wonder if Harry told Ruth all about his Uncle Billy and, you know, how he's going to be talking secret ways of grandeur or something like that. You know, just he's just frothing at the mouth.
Uncle Billy's a character, and I don't think it would take Ruth long to figure that out.
Correct. No, but the question is whether she was warned. That's, you know, you know, usually when you go and meet a family for the first time, you get at least the major points are given to you. You know, this is...
Watch out for my crazy uncle.
That's right. Watch out for my crazy uncle, who's apparently now 59, you know, and even now he'll say if he needs to find a job, you know, he'll find something. We hear a lot of chatter in the background and things like that. And then George stands right next to Ruth. She goes, "Here, have some popcorn." It got me thinking, like, what do you know about popcorn besides the fact that it's, you know, something popular that, you know, that we all like to have when we're watching movies.
Well, you know, for somebody who consumes massive amounts of popcorn, I know very little about it. I don't know how the corn gets treated in order to get it to pop, how long it has to be dried, whether or not there's particular breeds of corn that they use for any of those things. I don't know any of that. I just know that I want mine, you know, hot with butter. And I know it's not real butter. It's butter flavored oil. And I'm okay with that because that tastes pretty damn good. And right. Add a little salt. And, you know, then sometimes people add other flavors to it. That's all good as well. I'm afraid I have to restrict myself when I go to the movies because I'll do one of those big tubs of popcorn by myself. And I'll start the second I'm in sitting down. And my daughter, when she goes with me to the movies, she basically takes the popcorn and puts it on the other side of her and says, you can't have it until the movie starts. But I have no background information about how popcorn originated or any of the other, you know, technical things related to it. But okay. I'll bet you do.
I know some of the things about it. Yes. So first of all, where was corn originally grown? Do you know that?
You know what? I assume that it was someplace here in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes, it was. It was grown in the areas which are now known as Mexico.
Okay.
Apparently. Archaeologists have found evidence that people have been eating popcorn for thousands of years, you know, ever since the movie started, apparently. I mean, they even have fossil evidence that claims that there were people eating corn that was popped all the way back to 4,700 BC. So according to that, we're talking about, 6,000 years ago? Almost 7,000 years ago.
That's so crazy. If you were watching one of those ancient Aztec games where they were playing with somebody's head, you might have been sitting in the stands having some popcorn.
There you go. Exactly. You know, makes sense. And basically only in, once the Americas were discovered by the Europeans, that's when, you know, back to what we were talking about yesterday about triangle trade. So, corn was being sent over to Europe, and they started planting corn all around the world at that point. I mean, if I remember correctly, I think the Pilgrims' first meal with the Indians, they actually the corn was one of the things that they apparently were introduced to at the time.
At the time, the famous first Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right.
Corn is in almost everything nowadays. Most modern products have some kind of corn element to it, whether it's corn syrup for sweetening or whether it has to do with the starch that they use to hold other ingredients together. It's ubiquitous. And I know this because my oldest daughter is allergic to corn. She's a celiac and she's allergic to corn, which means food just wants to kill her.
Apparently. She's
sick.
Wait, so how does she watch movies?
She fortunately for her, she's not the huge movie fan that my younger daughter is.
Are you sure that she's yours, Richard?
I'm pretty sure because believe me, whenever I argue with her, I know I'm listening to myself.
Okay, that's fair.
But we thought for years that she was allergic to avocados because she would have hives and allergic reaction to when we would have guacamole, and then we figured out, no, it's not the avocados, it's the corn chips.
Ah, okay. Well, okay. Well, I'm glad you figured that out. I mean, again, unfortunately, I hope she didn't overly enjoy eating corn all the time.
No. It's one of those things she just had to get used to, like a lot of things, you know, so she follows a gluten-free diet and a corn-free diet, and that means that there's just not as much to choose from.
No, sir, she's just eating a lot of potatoes.
Yeah. Yeah, rice flour.
There you go.
And almonds for a variety of products. And she, you know, if she's going to have soda, she's got to make sure that it's pure sugar.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's fair. No, none of that corn syrup.
That's it.
That's right.
That's it.
But when do you think the term popcorn was first started to be used?
That's an interesting one. I would assume it's probably, well, it sounds to me like it's an English term. So after the Native Americans introduced it to those who were arriving from the old world.
Well, obviously it was after that, but again, we're talking after 1620. When after 1620?
Okay, I'll say 1737.
Okay, 1848.
All right. Well, I was only off by 100 years.
That's right. Which, you know, when we're talking about, 7,000 years of history. So, you know.
Then that's pretty good.
Since, you know, since they found that people in Peru were eating, popcorn 7,000 years ago. So I guess so. So in
I wonder what they called it for the first 6,000 years.
That's a great question that I do not know the answer to. It says here that there were times when it was called pearls or nonpareils. So we're calling it popcorn in the 1840s, and in Bartlett's Dictionary of Americanisms in 1848, so it appears there as popcorn.
All right. Yeah. I'll believe it. Do you have a source citation and page number and a publication? I'm good with that.
I actually do. If you're adamant, I can make sure that.
No, I wasn't asking for it. I assumed that you had it. You said that you had it. You gave me an appropriate citation for an oral presentation like this. That's fine.
There you go.
you can put all the details in the notes.
That's right. So they had a popcorn machine that was part of a streetcar at a certain point in the 1880s by a man in Chicago named Charles Curtors. And in the 1890s, it became even more popular once he himself created the popcorn maker, which was a steam powered machine that was able to, to pop the corns and stuff like that. And, you know, back to what we were saying about peanuts yesterday. So it also became very popular during the World's Fair.
There you are.
That's right.
That's probably when they started selling it in little bags and adding butter to it.
Well, at the beginning, they would sell them during the Great Depression. They would sell bags for 5 to 10 cents a bag. And
I was paying that now.
That's right. and it actually became a thriving business during that time because of the fact that it was so cheap. So
well, yeah. Price will drive it.
Apparently, and it makes sense. You know. And that's also what made it popular for movies, you know, because it was it was an inexpensive way to give people refreshments. So theater owner named Glenn Dickinson installed popcorn machines in the lobbies of all of his theaters. And he came to the realization that selling popcorn was even more profitable to him than selling the theater tickets themselves. So they would actually lower the prices of their tickets in order to sell popcorn.
Well, you know, they didn't have to share the profits from the popcorn sales with the film company.
That's true also. That's a good point. So the two of them are sitting there and they're eating popcorn. And then Ruth says, George, 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 that's all Harry ever talks about. You know, which again is interesting, you know, that he's this newly married, college graduate. And all he does is talk about his brother to his wife. He doesn't have anything else to talk about. Just let's talk about my brother.
Well, you know, he's a younger brother. Obviously, I think he has a little bit of hero worship of his brother. It's one of those things that you could imagine somebody, you know, bragging, brother who, you know, took over, did the responsible things. He looks up to him. That's just the way. That's the way kid brothers can be.
Right. Okay. I can understand that. But it's just funny the phrasing, you know, that Harry is, you know, they're again, they're trying to tell us here that Harry is always envious of George,
Yeah,
even though
well, I think
George
that that.
looks at it that there's no need for it.
Right. Well, we, like I said, if you were living someplace else, you met this girl, you fell in love, and she's asking you about your life back home, all of your stories involve your brother in this particular case. Because, you know, when you're talking about who your friends were and what's happened in your life, and you say, well, you know, my brother George saved my life when I was, you know, nine, you know, that kind of thing, or eight. And, you know, when my father passed away, George, you know, came to the rescue in those situations. I think all the major events in his life were centered around the family, and George is the center of the family, even though he doesn't recognize it.
Right. Okay. All right. That is fair. You know, and that, you know, again, it goes back to what we said, that they didn't have the internet for him to tell, you know, what he's been doing on the internet. So, you know,
Yeah, that's
he's got
right.
to talk about his brother who he goes, you know, dangerous sledding with, you know, that
That's
type of
it.
thing. So I guess that makes sense, you know, from that perspective. And then, George changes the subject a little bit and goes, Ruth, what about this job? She goes, "Oh well, my father owns a glass factory in Buffalo. He
There it
wants to."
is, Buffalo.
There you go. Oh, that's right. I said Rochester before. It is Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
He wants to get Harry started in the research business. Well, is it a good job? Oh yes, very. Not much money, but good future, you know. Well, of course, if you're working for the bosses, you know, if the boss is your father-in-law, of course you have a good future. Yeah. Harry's a genius at research, and my father just fell in love with him, and you did too. So, I mean, basically the dialogue here, and again, after this dialogue, I don't think we're ever going to see or hear from Ruth again. You know, she's going to go into the party, and that'll be it. But it's very important what it is that she's telling us here.
Well,
You
it's
know.
all the reason why George continues to make the decisions that he does. He says, you know, what's the best thing for Harry? You know, if I make Harry stay here, he's losing an opportunity that would be great. You know, he's got this lined up. He's got this pretty girl that he's married. He's got a future laid out in front of him. It's an industry that's likely to be growing, and there's a future to it. This is a good path, and here, you know, George is not going to throw up a brick wall for his brother to keep him from going down that path by, you know, kind of insisting that he take over the savings and loan. So it's another one of those things where we know why George makes these decisions, because he wants to do the right thing, and he wants to make sure in this particular case that this is in fact the right thing. That's why he quizzes Ruth about the job and what it's all about. Is this really something that's worthwhile and important and good for him?
Correct. He wants to make sure that you know that Harry will be taken care of. I think that's what
Yeah.
it comes down to. Again, I mean, we've already seen, even just in the few short scenes ever since Peter Bailey died, that George is basically running the family. You know, he's reached the point where he needs to now help as much as he can, you know, with everything, and therefore he's the one who made the decision that he's going to send Harry to college instead of himself. And he's the one who made the decision that he was going to stay in the savings and loan, you know, things like that, because it's the family business and stuff like that. You know, so even at this early age, he's already needed to take on the position of being the patriarch of the family. You know, and so, you know, when you know, one of the jobs of a patriarch is obviously to look at everyone else's situation and try and make the best decision based on what's going on. You know, what's the best decision for everybody around? I guess that makes sense, you know, for him
Yeah.
to you know, he's checking out Ruth and the story just to make sure that it makes sense and that it's worthwhile for Harry Bailey and the whole Bailey clan to, you know, to do things like this. So I can understand that. So we don't exactly know where Bedford Falls is in New York. but we know where Buffalo is. So what do you know about Buffalo?
Well, it's right on the edge of Niagara Falls. It's a very well-known industrial area. The Buffalo Bills played there. The Buffalo Bills football team is from, obviously, Buffalo, New York, and they made the Super Bowl 4 years in a row and lost it 4 years in a row.
Wow. See, I'm not a football fan, so I wouldn't have been able to tell you that. You know, if you would have said to me, you know, that the Bills were in the Super Bowl 4 years in a row, how many times did they win during that time? I would not have thought for a second zero. So
here you are, and like I said, I've been to Buffalo. It's exactly what you imagine to be, you know, kind of Western New York. It's not a cosmopolitan kind of area. It's a working class kind of area, and it's a lot of industry. And Niagara Falls is right across the road.
Correct. Okay. If you're thinking of the 100 largest cities in the U.S., where do you think Buffalo fits in?
I would think Buffalo would probably be down in the 20s.
Well, it's the 78th largest city in the U.S.
Wow, I'm really surprised at that. That's impressive. You know, I tell you what, it's interesting to me that the 78th largest city in the country has its own football team. I live in what is the 10th or 11th largest city in the country, and we don't have a football team, a professional football team.
I thought you were in Dallas.
Nope, Austin.
Oh, Austin. Okay. Okay. All right, that makes sense. Austin doesn't have any sports teams, do they?
We have a soccer team.
Like I said, they don't have any sports teams in Austin.
Yeah, and minor league, you know, there's a minor league hockey team, a minor league baseball team, but we don't have any major sports franchises. The basketball teams, the professional basketball teams, the Spurs and the Mavericks, play a game or two in Austin.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You know, to keep their fan base going, but we don't have our own sports teams here. So I never feel guilty about continuing to root for my hometown teams. My alma mater in college, the USC Trojans, who are having less successful year than we might have hoped. And then, you know, the Rams in professional football would probably be the team that I would root for because they were the team that I rooted for when I was a kid.
Okay, that's fair. So what year do you think the city of Buffalo was incorporated?
You know what? I have no clue, but I would imagine it was pretty early, maybe 1840s.
1832, very good.
All right.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's located right on the border. By Niagara Falls. As this whole conversation is going on, did you notice anything going on around them while they're having this conversation?
Not really. I seem to recall that there was some, you know, people walking around. They're at the popcorn stand. They're popping popcorn. Popping. I shouldn't say it that way. They're popping popcorn into their mouths. They're not popping popcorn. I think it's mostly close-ups on them,
right?
But there may be some activity in the background.
Yeah.
And but at the beginning of the minute, there's this long. There's like a 15-second segment where George is walking slowly and silently across the screen, mm-hmm. and all the traffic is going on in the background at the train station.
Right. Right. And so we see in the background, we see cars in the background and people walking and stuff like that. And then, you know, the scene changes and we're now. We're in front of the Bailey household, and I never noticed this before, but they're actually trying to take a family portrait.
Right.
Which, again, I've seen this movie dozens of times, and I never noticed that this is what they were doing. You know, so we have, awesome. You know, we don't recognize most of the people.
Well, let me look around and say, I can see Ma Bailey. There's Harry. What's the maid's name?
Annie.
I forget.
Annie.
Annie. And then in the background is the other cousin, right behind Uncle Billy,
That's right.
the
You have
one who works.
Tilly and you have Tilly, cousin
Yeah.
Tilly, and then the person who's taking the picture is actually cousin Eustace.
Yeah, there you go.
So yeah.
So, we don't recognize everybody, but we recognize a few people. So it does seem like it's a family photo opportunity. And it's the celebration that Uncle Billy had promised.
Oh yes, apparently, and it was a celebration that they thought it was only going to be for Harry. Little did they know. And as they're Eustace takes the picture, and he jumps up high, and I mean this is a time when they had to use big flash photography. You have a huge flash as the whole thing is going on. And there's music going on in the background.
Yeah,
And
it's quite elaborate. This is not a Brownie camera that somebody's just holding in their hands. There's a camera on a tripod. There are multiple flashes there that's going on. I do know for a fact, I don't know much about the business, but my great grandfather had a photography business back where my parents grew up, and I know that my grandmother. Her dad is the one that had this photography business, and I've got some business cards and some pictures from that business, and that business existed at that time, and they did exactly this kind of thing.
oh wow, that's actually very cool. And Eustace is standing there, and he jumps down. So apparently, he must have been standing on some sort of maybe a chair or a ledge or something like that to get a better perspective, a better view of everything in order to take this picture. Do you know where the word photography comes from? What does it mean?
No, I do not.
It means to draw with light.
You know what? I think I heard that someplace. I
It comes
think
from
there
the
was a,
Greek.
I think there's a film or a book that talks about photography that way, and I think I have heard that phrase to draw with light, but I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah. No, it's just, I never even thought about what does it really mean?
Pretty cool.
Yes. I'm sure our good friend James Wilson would love to hear that.
Yes.
So shout out to James if you're listening. And photography in some shape or form goes back really, really far, farther than I expected. Because I had always thought that they basically only had photography since the U.S. Civil War time. But apparently.
I think, yeah, it was maybe 30 or 40 years before that it
That's
started.
right. 1825. They would make heliographic engravings on metal plates.
I do think, because this is my reference on this American history stuff, I think that Andrew Jackson is the first president to actually have his photograph taken.
And
I think
Jackson, I
that's
think,
what
was
I
president
remember.
in the 30s, if I remember correctly.
Like I think 1828 to 1836, somewhere like that.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, so again, there's this elaborate party going on at the Bailey household. I love that they have what's that called? That you have at the end of horse races with a shoe an arch of flowers or something like that.
Oh yeah, there is a name for it, like a bouquet, but I can't think of what the phrase is that you have for horses. Then it's shaped like a shoe horse.
Right, but no, but here it's just like a pool of flowers. I mistakenly thought that it was that it was shaped somehow, but it's basically just like a staff, but it's pretty tall. It's probably at least 7 feet tall based on what we can see there. And as they're walking towards the house that basically finishes this minute. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Richard?
I can't think of anything that I would want to point out. There was, like I said, it was, this was one of the ones that I had the least number of notes on.
Okay, that's not a like crime. Said, it's okay.
Yeah.
Permitted.
All right, good.
All right.
Because that's where we are.
That is correct. So every Wednesday we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday. So the idea behind this segment is that for over the last 77 years since this movie came out, there have been numerous movies, TV shows that have taken the whole idea of the main theme of this movie, you know, of people seeing what their life would be like if, or what everyone else's life would be like without them, or in some cases also what their lives would be different. So each week I talk about some other TV show or movie that hones in on this type of theme. So I was trying to think of, okay, what am I going to talk about with Richard? You know, so I decided I was going to go to a sitcom from the 1970s.
Ah.
And the sitcom that I chose is Laverne and Shirley. Okay.
Interesting.
Are you familiar with an episode? Are you familiar with the show Laverne and Shirley?
I saw Laverne and Shirley. It was not one of the ones that I was routinely watching. I think I watched Happy Days, probably half the episodes. Laverne and Shirley, maybe 10 to 20% of the episodes. It was... I was a Bob Newhart guy.
Okay. But as we know nowadays, you can watch more than one show at the same time. You know, back then it was more difficult.
Yes.
So there is an episode that aired on ABC on May 12th, 1981. It was the 20th episode of the sixth season of Laverne and Shirley. Laverne and Shirley is a show that was a shoot-off of Happy Days, and basically it's about these two friends that are completely mismatched that live in Milwaukee and work at, I guess, a beer canning company or something like that. So one of them is Laverne, who's played Penny Marshall. So in this episode, the episode's name is Laverne's Broken Leg. So what happens is that basically she broke her leg. And she's really upset that she's missing a holiday party that's going on. And she convinces her friend Shirley that she should go without her. And then she starts watching TV and sees It's a Wonderful Life and falls asleep as It's a Wonderful Life is being shown on the screen. And she starts bitterly saying how much she wishes she was never born. And then she wakes up and there is this strangely dressed man who's in front of her, who says that he is her guardian angel in training, and that because of her wish, he will show her what life would be like if she had never existed. So then she sees Shirley, who is usually, you know, Shirley is played by Cindy Williams.
Cindy Williams, yes.
And, you know,
recently passed, yes. Cindy Williams. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Penny Marshall also passed away a few years ago. And basically the idea in the show is that Shirley is very tidy and cleanly. I mean, I think of this as sort of a female version of The Odd Couple type of thing. You know, with the way that the two characters are so mismatched. And in this new reality... So Shirley she's like someone who has like all these animals in her house. And she sits down and she's addicted to the soap operas on TV and stuff like that. So basically the whole idea is that Laverne helped Shirley break out of her cocoon over the course of their friendship. And, you know, so Laverne wasn't there to help Shirley do this. So Shirley became... closed off, you know, and I guess you can call her a cat lady type of thing, instead of you know, being able to go out and after getting dating tips and fashion tips and stuff like that from her good friend Laverne. And then we get to see Lenny and Squiggy, who are you know, friends of theirs, and apparently they've become criminals who escape from prison, and they basically end up getting arrested because they're stealing a TV set. because they used to borrow TV, you know, they used to come and either watch TV or borrow the TV from Laverne. So they went and stole it, and they end up getting caught because of it. And then Laverne's father, who is another character in the in this show, is looks he basically is homeless, and you know, in the show itself, he has this business where he makes a lot of money and stuff like that. So Laverne basically gets all upset about the fact that you know, that this is what's happened to all these people, and then she ends up waking up and realizing that it is a dream and that she really does exist, and that none of the people are have changed into what she thought would be. Again, this is another example of an okay rendition of It's a Wonderful Life. I was never the biggest fan of Laverne and Shirley. I mean, you mentioned that you've seen some of the episodes, right? But was it something that you remember enjoying, or it was just eh?
It was okay. It was okay. It was not must see TV, as they used to refer to
That was the 80s,
some
right?
essential programming. Yeah. It wasn't that way for me. Laverne and Shirley was very popular when I was in college, and I was busy those years.
Okay, that's fair. So yeah, I mean, this is an okay you know, episode dealing with It's a Wonderful Life. There are so many better ones, that some of them we've already discussed, and that we will discuss over the next the course of the next few months. And
I don't want to step on your future stories or your past stories, because I don't know what you're going to cover. But I do remember reading one of your reviews about a movie that fits this category, and you were not a fan of the movie, and I'm a big fan of the movie, so I'm just going to put in my 2 cents for One Magic Christmas.
okay, you can.
Which to me is definitely It's a Wonderful Life type story.
Yes, it is. I was not a big fan of it. You are correct, but you know, I'm allowed.
That's all right, of course. Everybody's got their different
That's
tastes.
right.
Like I said, and I don't know if you were going to bring it up or have already brought it up on this It's a Wonderful Wednesday activity, but if not, now it's there.
Yes. All right, great. So, Richard, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
People, you can locate me at kirkhamamovieaday.com. That's my WordPress site, which is basically a doppelganger site of my original site, which is also Kirkham A Movie A Day, but it's kirkhamclass.blogspot.com. That's a blogger site, and you'll find more links there to my other projects. Also, on a weekly basis, you can catch me on the Lamcast, which is the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, where we have more than 2,000 members, but not that many people are participating in the podcast. We have maybe an active 70 or so people that are joining the podcast on a semi-regular basis, although I haven't talked to a few of them in a year or two, so I'm going to have to go out and search for them. But the podcast can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.